For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
I'm going to describe to you the two nations with the complete opposite ideologies. This is basically the Jewish people and the rest of the world. That's what's going to be discussed mainly in the parsha. This, of course, is represented by Yaakov. Earlier, this one wasn't working, and this one was working. So, no, it's at the beginning here. Okay, so the parsha, this is represented again by Yaakov and Esav, of course. Okay, the parsha opens up with Rivka being barren. Yitzchak praying in one corner, Rivka praying in the other corner, and
from there we get
Yaakov and Esav. So we'll discuss that, and then it's a very difficult birth. It's a very difficult birth. She has a lot of very unusual labor pains. And she goes and gets a prophecy that these are going to be two diverse, completely different, as we mentioned, ideologies, two different nations. And the boys are described. One is a man in the field, outdoors, while the other one's inner. And that represents a lot. Esav, being outdoors, is only looking at the outward appearance of things. He only sees the outside things. We're going to discuss that more. He doesn't see the inner essence of anything. Yaakov dwells inside the tent. He's always looking at the inner essence of matters. And that really represents the two ideologies. The Western civilization, American, so forth. You know, it's not the steak that sells, it's the sizzle. Advertising, packaging, right? That's the big thing. The chitzonius, the outside, all the, you know, all that brainwashing, TV, radio, everything to get you to buy products to appeal to the senses, to the nerve endings. And Yaakov is just the opposite. He wants to see, he's not interested in gold-plated tin. He wants to see the inner essence of something, if it really has true inner value. Okay, so this is represented by the two statements that Esav is a man of the field, and Yaakov is a ishtam, yoshev oilim. He's a man that dwells inside the tents. And it says that Rivka loved Yaakov, and Esav was loved by Yitzchak, and that, of course, needs an explanation. That's one of the big questions. What was Esav about, and did Yitzchak not know that Esav was a wicked person? After this, we have the selling of the birthright, which is another, you know, really needs an explanation. The outside world takes this, unfortunately, and commits tremendously just a complete warped image of what Yaakov Avinu is all about. And we'll see why it was a mitzvah to get this bechora, this birthright, out of the wicked man's, Esav's hands, or there would have been no kium for the world. We'll go into that. Esav sells the bechorah for a bowl of beans. That's what we got here. Then, next thing we learn is another famines in the land, besides the first famine that happened in times of Abraham. And Yitzchak and Rivka, they go down to Philistine land. He wants to leave. He wants to follow his father's footstep and go to Egypt, but Hashem stops him and says, "You can't. You're an oila tamima. You're a perfect korban. You're an offering." And the halacha is that a korban, an offering, is not allowed to leave the boundaries of Israel. You can't take it out of Israel. And that's what Yitzchak is. So again, the perfect avot. He was the one that lived, died, spent his entire life in Israel. The first Jew to have a bris milah 8 days old. Right? The only one of the patriarchs that lived to 180. They're all supposed to live to 180. He experienced the resurrection of the dead. We mentioned a few weeks ago, he pronounced the bracha, Brachat Hashem Mechaya Meisim, you resurrect the dead, when after the Akedah, his soul flew out of his body. This is a person not really part of this world. This is the Yemei Mashiach Jew. And Yaakov is us, the Jew in Golis, the Jew that has to sometimes resort to trickery to get by and not be completely overwhelmed by the non-Jewish world. Yaakov, us, we're the ones that have to deal with the Lavans of the world, the Esavs of the world, being conned and tricked. Our brother Esav sometimes wants to kill us out of brotherly love, assimilation, and sometimes comes to us, Esav wants to kill us physically. And that's been following us throughout all of our history. After the incident in Plishtim Lam, it seems that Avimelech tells Yitzchak to dwell where he wants, not like Paro told him to leave. And Yitzchak is fabulously wealthy. The Jew gets wealthy in a depression where everybody else is doing bad. And the jealousy, right? It's just, this should sound very familiar. The jealousy is stirred up. Get out of here. You've become wealthy from us, they say. Right? And they chase Yitzchak out of there. And then they come running after him. They want to make a peace treaty with him, which is fascinating in itself. This is all in the place called Be'er Shava. Okay? Then we go, this is the end of chapter 26 now, we enter chapter 27, and we see that Esav is described at 40 years old as taking another wife and on top of his idol-worshipping wives. And then we have where Yitzchak is getting old. He doesn't know when he's going to die. And he wants to offer brachos. And this is the third big question of the parsha. Right? Number one, why is it that Yitzchak loved Esav? Number two, how could Yaakov sell the birthright? How could Esav sell the birthright for a bowl of beans? And number three, here, which is tied into number two, is the deception or apparent deception of Rivka telling Yaakov to, you know, look like Esav and get the blessings that were going to go to Esav. What's going on there? And that is, that will take us through where Esav gets very upset, wants to kill his brother. Rivka tells Yitzchak, you know, let's get Yaakov out of here. Let him get a wife from my, you know, from my family. And at that time, Yitzchak sends for Yaakov and gives him another set of brachas. Another set of brachas at the end of the parsha. When he knows he's talking to Yaakov, he gives him Birchas Avraham, the spiritual brachas of Avraham that were always meant to go to the spiritual heir, Yaakov. And that's how the parsha basically ends. Let's go back, pick up some highlights. Number one, the parsha opens up, we mentioned, with the barrenness of Rivka. She's in one corner, Yitzchak's in the other. And they pray that she'd be able to conceive. And if we look at the verses, chapter 25, verse 20, and it says that Rivka is Bas Pesuel. She's the daughter of Pesuel, Harami, and she is the sister of Lavan, Harami. And Rashi brings down, this is to praise Rivka, that she was the daughter of a very wicked person and the sister of a very wicked person, and yet she remained righteous. She remained righteous. Daughter of a wicked person and sister of a wicked person. Okay, very important. Follow. Verse 21, they each pray in their corner, and it says at the end of the verse, and Hashem answered his prayer. Yitzchak's prayer was answered, and therefore Rivka conceived. Rivka's prayer was not, I can't say it wasn't answered, but okay. Yitzchak's prayer was the one that did it. Rashi, why was Yitzchak's prayer accepted, answered rather, and as opposed to Rivka? And it says, "Eina doime tefilah shel tzaddik ben tzaddik." You cannot compare the tefilah, the prayer of a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, Yitzchak, right, is a tzaddik, and the merit of his father, Avram, to the prayer of a tzaddik ben Rasha, to the prayer of a tzaddik, a tzaddikus, Rivka, right, she's a tzaddikus, but she doesn't have zchus avos, you know, her father was a wicked person. Okay. So on the simple pshat, we always learn that to mean, well, Yitzchak had his own merit, and the merit of Abraham, right? And the previous verse just praised Rivka that despite that she was the daughter and sister of a wicked person, she was righteous. Right? So that's how we always learn. I saw a beautiful insight. Listen to this. You know that one of the hardest jobs we have is not taking our Yiddishkeit for granted. Right? Once you become from, right, and you start rattling off the brachas, right? There's this guy who had he went to a Rebbe once, and he says, Rebbe, when am I going to get rid of the stigma of a Baal Tshuva? I've been a Baal Tshuva since I was 15. I'm 48 years old now. You know, for 33 years. Will I ever get rid of this, like, you know, label Baal Tshuva? You know, how long will we go? You know, when will I get rid of this? So the Rebbe said, as soon as you start rattling off brachas where no one understands a word you're saying, then you won't be a Baal Tshuva. Which means is, when you're fresh in Yiddishkeit, there's like a geschmack, and you don't take things for granted, right? And you say your davenings with some kavana, with some ava, some love, you feel it, right? You know, then it gets a little tougher. The more you get into Yiddishkeit, and the more you do it every day, and day in and day out, it's very hard to find the geschmack in davening, or, you know, learning, or doing the various mitzvahs, you know, for a guy to fill in, you know. You take these things for granted, right? So, that's the insight here. Rivka, you can bet she worked up one heck of a prayer. Why? She's a Baal Tshuva. She's a tzedekus, the son of, you know, daughter of a Rasha, right? So she got into it. She had a lot of fire in her tefillah, no doubt about it. Yitzhak was a lot harder. That's the praise of Yitzhak. Yitzhak, despite, not because, not only because he was a tzaddik ben tzaddik, but despite the fact he was a tzaddik ben tzaddik, even though he was a from birth guy, right? He was an FFB, right? And he was in the system. And for him, it would take a lot more to work up a prayer, right? Despite that, that's how powerful his prayer must have been. He still was able to put some originality and some ava in his tefillah, and it was answered. I thought it was a beautiful insight. Okay. The next verse, V'yiratzu al-bonim, the children ran within her. That's what it literally means. And this bothered Rivka tremendously. In fact, they say Rivka could have merited to have all 12 tribes of Israel, but because she said, Lama zanachi, why do I have to have this? So she lost out that opportunity, but you know the rule. If she got slammed for such a thing, you know how great she must have been, because, you know, right, you and I wouldn't have gotten that wouldn't have been a sin for us.
Parents would have had the 12 tribes, and then this one kid that was totally out of sorts with it.
That I don't
was
know,
peculiar too.
Well, we'll discuss that. I want you to know, you bear that in mind, because it gives you a whole different perspective that the brothers thought that's exactly was the case with Yosef. And if you and I were there, we would have said the same thing. And we'll discuss that in a later Parsha class. But they saw Yosef as an Esav, or as a Yishmael, as an outcast. Yeah. And there still could have been 12 tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh, remember. It still could work. So, but at any rate, that they were running around, these two, and the Medrash brings, you know, the famous Medrash, whenever they went by a house of Avodah Zarah, right? So Esav wanted to go out, an idol worship place. I went by the house of a base medrash, right? Yaakov went out. By the way, I'll just tell you a cute little story. The Gemara Nida says the best of all worlds is when you're in your mother's womb. You have an angel teaching you the Torah, and you see from one end of the world to the other. You see how everything fits, how it connects. It's tremendous insight you get into the Torah. The Rebbe is an angel, Malach. Now, we know the Mishnah Perkei Avos says, Aselecha Rav Kanalecha Chaver, make for yourself a rabbi, but even buy a friend. Which means, even at the expense that you might lose some money, a friend can be more important. You understand? Even at a monetary loss, a friend can be more important than a rabbi. than a Rebbe. Why? Because a friend you relate to, he has more of an influence on. You got to be very careful, you know, we're always concerned children who their friends are, right? Give you more important than a Rebbe, right? So they say you learn it from here. So they say on this medrash, you know, Aesop went by a house of idol worshiping. I can understand. He wanted out, you know, he wanted worse idols. But Yaakov, when they went by a place of Kedusha, of holiness, why did he want out? He had a maid inside his mother's womb. He had a malach, an angel for a Rebbe to teach him all the Torah. So it just goes to show you, even if your Rebbe is a malach, if you got a chavrusa like Esav, you got to get out of there. Look, they say, you know, Esav, if we seen Esav, we would have been very impressed by him. And you're going to see, yet Yitzchak was impressed by him. We'll have to figure this one out. So, but mainly what Rivka was very bothered with, I'll tell you the difference between Yitzchak and Rivka. Rivka was very bothered that she didn't realize she had twins until she got this prophecy. She has that one son who's a schizo, you know? And that she couldn't deal with. She couldn't deal with the fact that, as I saw it worded very nicely here, she couldn't deal with the fact that she would have one son that would, like there would be an eternal brotherly strife in the ranks of Israel, right? She thought, either one interpretation was that she thought she had one son who was schizo, sometimes be righteous, sometimes wouldn't. Or that she knew she had twins, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, that she knew she had twins, but she saw a strife within Israel, no unity, that it would be brothers fighting each other. This she couldn't stand. And that's why she said, Lama ze anochi, it's better I not be pregnant. There's going to be internal strife in Israel. But when she was told, as the next verse says, no, Shnei Goyim bebitnech. There's two different nations, right? So one will be an external threat, but not an internal threat, right? It's not two brothers fighting. It's not going to be an internal threat to the people. It's going to be an external threat to the people. There'll be fighting, but it'll be from the outside. So that's bearable. That she could bear with. As long as within the ranks of Israel there's unity and not fighting. You understand? That's Rav Moshe Feinstein's Chiddush. Okay. So that's what she's told in verse 23. Two nations, and they're going to go opposite directions. When one is great, the other is going to be down. One's down, the other is going to be great. They're never going to have power at the same time. Now, this prophecy to Rivka, she was not allowed to tell to Yaakov, to Yitzchak. She did not tell to Yitzchak, so he did not know this prophecy. He is going to utter, not even realizing it, Hashem's going to put the words in his mouth, a very similar prophecy when he's giving out the brachas. Hakol kol Yaakov, vayudayim yedei Esav. The voice is the voice of Yaakov, Torah and davening. And the hands, the physicality, the sword, the might, the physical power in the world, that's going to be Esav, right? And again, when the call of Yaakov is heard, then the hands of Esav will not have any power. Okay, the same similar prophecy here. Very interesting. This word toimim in verse 24, it's written chaser, it's written missing. In other words, tomim is usually written, it means twins, with the yud, between the mem and the final mem. And as a matter of fact, if you look, when Tamar, right, Yehuda and Tamar gives birth to two boys, right, Peretz v'Zerach, so there, the same word is written fully, right, because there were two tzaddikim, or two sons. Here it's written effectively, chaser, missing, because one of the sons was missing. They weren't perfect twins. One was Esav, right, while the other was Yaakov. Okay, listen to the description of Esav. He comes out, admoini, red. Ka'aderes sar, like a coat of hair. And they called his name Esav, from the word asu, made, ready-made, the ready-made man. Right, he was all done up. It's very interesting. Adamoini, he came out red, ruddy complexion. He already showed a tendency to shed blood. There is such a thing. It says when Shmuel Novi came to anoint a king over Israel, he saw David, Dovid HaMelech looked just like Esav. Same complexion. And Shmuel Novi was a prophet. Shmuel was afraid to anoint him. So this is a blood shedder. Until a voice from heaven said, yes, he'll shed blood, but only by, he has pretty eyes, he said, eyes meaning Sanhedrin. He'll only listen to the Sanhedrin and do the battles of God. I'm telling you this, bearing in mind, that Esav and Lahavdil, Dovid HaMelech, had a similar drive. There's no such thing as a negative drive. Everything can be, not, there's such thing as negative drive. There's no such thing as a negative or positive character traits. Right? You can channel them. Dovid channeled this physicality, lustfulness, whatever it was, in service of God. And Esav didn't. That's part of the answer of why Esav loved him, which we're going to discuss shortly. Yaakov comes out afterwards. He holds on to the heel of Esav. Therefore, he's called Yaakov, because the word in Hebrew for heel means Akev. Symbolizes at the end of the dominion, on the heels of the dominion of Esav, then will come our dominion. We'll be grasping on to the heel. Okay? The children grew up, and verse 27, chapter 25, verse 27, Esav is a man who knows how to trap, it says. He's a man of the field, right? He's a hunter, right? And we already described that. He's a hunter, and Yaakov is an Ishtam, and Rashi says his heart is like his mouth. Whatever he said is what was inside of him. It wasn't two different things. And he dwelt inside the tents. Ve'yehav Yitzchak es Esav. Yitzchak loved Esav. Okay. And Rivka Ohevis. Constantly, Rivka loved Yaakov. So all the commentaries say there's something similar, we'll see, with Leah. It says Leah was hated. She wasn't hated. What it means is, compared to Yaakov's love for Rachel, it was as if she was hated. Same thing here. It does not mean that Yitzchak did not love Yaakov. Okay? It just means he had a special liking for Esav, which we're going to see why. But by Rivka, it does mean that. It means Rivka did not like Esav. You got to understand, Rivka understood what an Esav was all about. She grew up, her father was Besuel, her brother was Lavan, right? She knew an Esav when she saw one, right? Okay. Then we have the incident, right?
Wait, go back.
Okay. I'll tell you now. He was a hunter with his mouth, which means, Rashi says the following. It's actually good that we mention it now. He hunted with his mouth. So, one interpretation is, he gave him hunt to eat with, right? In other words, he hunted and he fed, hunted with his mouth. The other is that he deceived with his mouth. He hunted, trapped with his mouth, is a better translation. Which means he used to ask his father, do you have to tithe salt and straw? He used to ask all these, which you don't, by the way. But he used to ask these questions to make him look like, even things that you're exempt on, I'm such a tzaddik, I want to know, can I tithe salt? You know, that was Esav. And then he'd go out in the field, and he, as you're going to see later, he raped and he murdered, and he did all the, you know, big sins. So, when in Parsha Shemini, where it describes four animals, you know, the signs of kashrus is either, you know, chew your cud and the split hooks. So only four animals have one, but not the other sign. Many animals have both signs, or none of them. But only four have one, not the other. Two different types of rabbits, a hare and a rabbit, okay, a camel and a pig. And as you're going to see over and over again, those four represent the four exiles. The four exiles come up over and over again. You know what Esav is? He's going to be called here in a second, Edom. Edom, Rome, this exile that we're in right now. He's the pig. The pig is the only one of those animals that their non-kosher simon, their non-kosher sign, is inside where you can't see it. So they say That's Edom. That's our civilization, the chazer, the pig. Look, look, I'm kosher. Look at my outside, the man of outside, the man of external trappings. He only sees, you know, what you see is what you get. Look, I'm kosher. The inside is the hypocrisy. Inside, he doesn't chew the cud, right? It's non-kosher. So Edom's compared to the pig of those four animals. He trapped his father with his mouth. Can I miser, can I tithe salt and straw? Things that are completely superfluous, right? Makes it sound like such a tzaddik. And then he goes out and commits the most dastardly of sins. So that's Esau. That's the civilization. All the things that they preach in humanity, and we're so concerned about this cause and that cause. Hypocrisy. Right, right. Same thing is true. It's very true what you said. The Nazis were tremendously concerned about animal rights. They shechted, they killed Jewish people, Jews, thousands, because they felt our methods of shechting animals was inhumane. Happens to be the most humane way. But even if it was inhumane, can you imagine the hypocrisy? So you kill human beings because you feel the way they treat animals is inhumane. So that's a lot of what this civilization is about. So I'm going to take questions in about 5 minutes. I just want to finish this thought, so excuse me, I'm rambling today. So he comes in from the field. He's very tired. Follow along with me, verse 29. Okay? And Yaakov is making a lentil soup. And you know why? Avram. Right. That's right. The mourner's meal. A very spiritual, symbolic meal. That's what's being done here. The whole world's mourning. Esau's out in the field. Esau's out in the field. On the day of his grandfather's death, the tzaddik of the generation, he's out in the field hunting. So Esau comes in, he says, I'm very tired. Give me that red stuff. That's what he says. Adam, Adam is in that red, red stuff because I'm very tired. Therefore, his name is called Edom. Red. His name is red. Because he called it red, red stuff, therefore his name is Edom. That needs an explanation. Yaakov sells him the birthright. Okay, now let's go into it. First of all, Esau is the ultimate career guy. He's the workaholic. Yeah, he's a hunter. He comes in from the field, right? If you come in, you're so obsessed with your work that you can't even call the food by its name. Forget about calling it a mourner's meal. Okay, that's beyond it. But at least call it. Give me some of that red soup. Something. But you just call it. You don't even identify. You just identify with the first thing that catches your eye. Red. Right? So I heard from my friend. He says, this is like the modern day workaholic that's so obsessed with his work, he doesn't have the time, the patience to even identify something simple like his food, right? And how much more so his family or spirituality, right? So, so he says the following. You notice right afterwards, Yaakov says to him, right after he says his name is Edom, verse 31, Yaakov says, sell me kayom, like today, the Bechorah, the firstborn rights. What's this word, kayom, today, now? So he says it fits in very nicely. This guy has no patience and time for anything. The workaholic coming in from the field, all he sees is red food stuff, right? Red food, red stuff. Yaakov says, sell me kayom. That's why he's called Edom. Because if the only thing that matters to Esau is kayom, this day, what can I have today? Don't tell me about the future. Don't tell me about some esoteric birthright or anything. I want to know what I can get my hands on today. Right? Cold heart. By the way, Esau, that's the Yetzer Hara. You know how the Yetzer Hara makes a person sin? Right? We all know good's better than bad. So why do we sin? Because the Yetzer Hara gives upfront cash. The Yetzer Tov gives you credit. Gives you credit. Yeah, you do a mitzvah? I'm going to pay you. You're going to get paid. Big time. Next world. Don't give me this debt. I want upfront cash. Let me have what I get my hands on. That's Esau. That's the Yetzer Hara. Okay? So therefore, kayam, like today, you, the person that's only interested in today, the here and now, that's the only thing that matters to you, right? Your whole essence is only in what is in what you can get for today. That's the only thing that matters. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Motto of Rome. That is Edom. Rome is Edom, okay? I want today. It's impossible for you, Esav, right, to be the true Bechor, the true firstborn with all its spiritual implications. Because by nature, spirituality means a future world, right? You have no shaykhus, no connection to spirituality, right? Your main thing is you want to be successful in your profession, and it's so consuming that your family doesn't matter to you. Spiritual values don't matter to you, right? All you want is physical sensation to tickle your nerve endings. Okay? And by the way, it's very interesting. That's what they say. You know, you cannot go one day out there in the world without someone asking you, so what do you do? What are you? Oh, that's even better. What are you? Why? That's amazing. You know, like if you, I drink coffee. Am I a cup of coffee? In my case, I might be because I drink so much of it. But most people, you know, that's insane. That's insane. I'm a computer programmer. No, you're not. You're a Jew. That's what Yonah taught us. I am a God-fearing Jew. What do I do to bring in money? What's my ishtalus? What does a Kodesh Baruch Hu shower? What's my involvement? Of course, Shmuel gives me money through this means, that means, sell shoes, whatever it is. But you're not be'etzem a computer program. So that's that outside world. They really believe that's what they really are. They eat so they have the strength to go to work. So that's that outside world. They really believe that's what they really are. They eat so they have the strength to go to work. And then they work because they can have the money so they can eat. And that's it. That's their whole life. And there's nothing anymore. Okay. So that's what Aesop's all about. Now, from here, you're going to learn when you see someone evil who cannot have a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah by hook or crook to take the Sefer Torah. That's Rabbi Yehuda Chossi says this. It's a mitzvah to deceive any way possible to get a mitzvah, a holy Sefer Torah, out of the hands of a Rosha. Everything goes, right? So, right now, we're going to go more down, I'm going to stop for questions, but we're describing what Esav is all about. And this gives you a little bit of a feel, why he's called Edom. I mean, just because he asked for red food, you call him red? Just because what? No, because this incident is more than this incident. It symbolizes what he's all about. You know, this is mournersful, has symbolic, spiritual nature to it. No, all you see is something that can, you know, satisfy your nerve endings. You know, it can fill your gut. Red food. You don't even see the spiritual significance of it. Therefore, his name is called Edom, forever ratifying his status of never looking beyond the physical, only seeing what's in front of him, only seeing the now, the immediate gratification at all costs. Don't tell me about the future. I want the here and now. And that's why he's willing to sell his birthright for a bowl of chont. Because he thinks he's getting a better deal. It says he brought in a bunch of men with him and made fun of Yaakov. Made fun of, look what Yaakov, you know, he sold me some sort of birthright and I got a good square meal out of it, you know. Okay, we'll stop for questions. See, what do you do with old business rabbi cars when you're no longer the rabbi in Chattanooga? You use them on your drives to take notes. Right here, Heidi, I have it. Why was Esav so upset? But I'm going to question it a little differently. Rabbi Grossman questions your question in the following manner. Why, if he was so willing here to sell the birthright, and the Torah attests to it that after he ate, the Torah test afterwards, verse 34, Vayesht, Vayochal, he ate, Vayesht, he drank, Vayakam, he got up, Vayelach, he went, Vayevazet, Vayivez Esav is a Bechera, and despised the birthright. After you eat, you said, oh no, what did I do? Right, this is proof that it wasn't starving death. You know, okay, you give into a desire, a lust. So after you feel some remorse, like, oh, man, I traded eternity for a bowl of beans? No, the Torah testifies. He ate, he drank, he got up, and he despised the birthright. He didn't regret it. Didn't regret it at all. By the way, it's just interesting. Esav's the man of action. I don't remember else. I'm sure there's, I don't know, but look, five straight verbs. Vayochal, yay, vayesh, he drank, vayakam, he got up, vayelach, he went, vayeves, and he despised the birthright. The man of action. He has to feel alive, he has to be doing something, he has to take a vacation, he has to go someplace, and he has to be planning on his vacation, where his next vacation is going to be. Right? Adventure. Something. I got to be doing something to feel I'm alive, or else I'm dead inside. That's Esau. That's the Western culture, civilization. You know, games, more games, new games. The other day I was at the court tennis. They have a new game of tennis where it's like a combination of racquetball. You can hit it off the walls too with the net. New games. You got to have new games. Three-dimensional chess, right? All the, you got to have more and more. Anything to distract you. That's what this country's all about. It should be well, but that's what the country's all about. Sports, all these things. Trivia pursuit. Boy, that sums it up. Trivia pursuit. Anything to distract you. Don't stop and think where you're heading in life, what's going on. That there might be something beyond this. That's too scary. That's Esau. Okay, so going back to Heidi's question. Why was Esau upset? He willingly sold the Bechora, yet later on, when the blessings are being pronounced, Esau comes in, right? After Yaakov dressed up as Esau, gets the brachos, right? Esau comes out and he screams, "Is oh no, have you only one blessing?" And he hated Yaakov for the brachos. So Heidi's answer is this, and this is, hopefully we're going to tie everything together now. Why Yitzchak loved Esau? Okay. And all these other factors. Number one, Esau thought, fine, we're making a deal. From the womb, we were fighting over two worlds. Yaakov, you want the future world? Fine, I want this world. You got yourself a deal. Birthright, not just a meal, it represents, I want this world. Yaakov, you want the Bechora, the spiritual rights, whatever, all this esoteric stuff, doesn't interest me. Fine. You take the future world, I take this world. But look at the brachas that are given by Yitzchak, right? If you turn chapter 27, verse 12, right, excuse me, a little further. Okay, verse 21. Comes, Yitzchak goes up to Yaakov, he feels him, and now he starts the brachas. Verse 25, he eats, he drinks, and then he says the following. Verse 28, may God give you from the dew of the heaven, from the fat of the earth, and rub Dagon, the Siroish, and may the nation serve you, right? Right, and you'll be a Gavir to your older brother, to your brother rather, and all the nations, all the children of your mother will bow down to whoever curses you will be cursed, whoever blesses you will be blessed. Physical brachas. Now Esau was upset. Wait a second, that wasn't the deal. The deal was you get the future world, I get Olam Hazeh. Now he found out what's going on here. There's physical brachas here. That wasn't the deal. Okay, so that's one reason why he was upset. Now, why was Esau loved by Yitzchak? This ties into this answer as well. Okay, this is it. Every kind likes its own kind. You know what Yitzchak stood for? Gevura, inner strength. A physical gibor is a physical strong person. Well, that means he has that spiritual quality. But if he doesn't channel it, it just manifests itself in a physical, and he looks like a yardie. And that's what Esau was. But he had Yitzchak's gevura, only in the physical sense. And he became a gibor. He became a great, mighty hunter. But Yitzchak saw a man wrestling with himself, and he could be as great as David HaMelech. He could take it like David HaMelech did and channel it. So I need to give him the brachas. Yaakov doesn't need the brachas. I know what Yaakov's all about. He's a tzaddik. He's a straight A student. This guy's getting D's. Let me work with him. Anytime you work and you invest with a child, anything, you become more attached to him. You love him more. You got more in there. He comes home with a C, you're going to throw a party. Right? So this is a guy who rests himself. The brachas, he needs them. Maybe they'll help him fulfill his potential. Right? Because he has a great potential. I can relate to him. I'm Gevurah. He's Gevurah. He's going the wrong way with it. Right? Like Avram, it's Chesed. He had a son that was Chesed. Yishmael. Wrong way. Physical Chesed. He became a very lustful person. Right? Got a channel into Ruchnius. So Yitzchak said, look, I know what Esav's about. Okay? Work with him. Give him the brachas. He's my own kind. Every kind likes his own kind. He could be a Zevulun. Yeah, he's a physical guy. Great, use that physicality. Yaakov's an Ishtam, Yeshev Olim. He's a spiritual guy. This could be a partnership. Esav, you take care of the physical necessities in life. You support your brother Yaakov, who's learning the tents. You get equal share of his Torah. You'll find your portion in the world. He missed it by one generation. The next generation, that's exactly what happened. Zebulun and Yisachar. The famous Zebulun Yisachar contract that we have to this day. Those two tribes, Zebulun was a merchant. He went out and worked, supported Yisachar, who stayed to learn Torah, and they got equal share of the Torah. Right? The perfect partnership. That's what Yitzchak had in mind. Rivka said, no. Esav's not going to do that. He's going to take all those materialistic blessings and he's going to use them for himself. He's not going to support Yaakov. Yaakov's got to get those blessings or there's not going to be any hope for Jews in this world. The end of days, the Gemara in Sukkah describes the story. It says, Hashem takes the Torah and says, whoever had a portion in this, let him come and reap reward. Rome, Edom will come. We have a part in it. We built marketplaces and streets, right? And bathhouses so Israel could learn Torah better. Hashem will say, M'shaita Shabbalam, fools of the world. You did it for your own pleasure. But the Havamina was, if they really did build those marketplaces and streets and bathhouses so Israel could learn Torah, right, take care of the civilized world, then they would have had a share in Torah. That's what Yitzchak had in mind. That's what he had in mind. Okay? That was some of the things going on here. Great, great calculations. Yes. In a certain sense, it was none of her concern who was right or wrong. She had a prophecy, and the rule is in prophecy, you have to do everything in your power to make the prophecy come true. You don't sit back. Miracles and prophecies, Hashem still wants you to do everything possible to make it look natural. Rivka had a prophecy. She wasn't to tell it to Yaakov. I can't go into all the ramifications, but I can tell you mystically, Yaakov had to receive these brachas b'mirma. B'mirma is the key word. B'chokma, with wisdom, translates, it's a trickery. It's a rectification of the sin that the snake caused Adam and Chava to sin. Okay? This was a rectification. Mystically, Kabbalistically, Zohar goes into it, why the brachas had to be given in such a fashion. So it wasn't a matter whether one was right or one was wrong. Each one was doing their role. Okay, so much so, right, Yitzchak knew what he had to do, right? And the person that was standing before him, Hashem, gives the brachas. He lets the words enter his mouth. That's why he says, God bruch tiyeh, he will be blessed, he will stay blessed. I realize if Hashem let me utter these brachas, when he found out it was Yaakov, it was meant to be. Okay? So Rivka, Dafka was, had to be, the whole tone is set in the last week's parsha. Rivka has a tremendous awe for Yaakov. When she sees him, she falls off the camel. That was done on purpose. Because the truth is, she's unique amongst the matriarchs in that she never approaches Yitzchak with things. You don't see that with the others. That's for a reason, because these brachas were meant to be given this way. So she had an awe of Yitzchak. She was a tremendous... whatever. Okay, so there's a reason for that. But I want you to know, this story continues and continues. Leah is the destined mate for Esav. possible she could have turned him around, right? Okay, we know what happens. Yaakov is deceived, and he gets Leah. She becomes, you know, one of the matriarchs, which is meant to be. Fine. But I just want you to know it doesn't end there. There's a daughter, Leah's daughter, Dinah, right? Yaakov's going to be punished for hiding Dinah. He doesn't want Esau to see her. You're not allowed to let your daughter marry a wicked person. But still, whatever, he should have felt bad because it says that Dinah might have been able to make him righteous. So this doesn't end. You know, you just don't write off Esau. There was their concern that Leah, Dinah, the brachos of Yitzchak, something could have channeled him and used these character traits that are described identical with David HaMelech. Right? That was the greatness of David HaMelech, by the way, just for a second. He could have been gone to an Esav type of lifestyle, but he channeled it all in the service of God. So that was the greatness. Let me just mention a couple of things, then we'll take more questions as we're running late, as usual. Esav did 5 sins that day. Avram actually was taken 5 years earlier than he was supposed to be. He was supposed to also die at 180. He was taken at 175, so you wouldn't see Esav turn bad, because that would not have been great nachas. Okay? So, 5 sins he committed. He denounced the resurrection of the dead. He raped somebody that day. He murdered somebody that day, right? One other I forgot. And also here, he despises the birthright. 5 big, I think he stole also, stole, raped, murder, right? Denounced the resurrection of the dead, and he spurned the birthright. The Torah only mentions that he spurned the birthright by Yivez as a Bechera. That's the only one the Torah mentions. Rav Aaron Cutler asked why. I mean, you know, these other things seem a lot worse. You know, saying there's no Hashem, saying there's no resurrection of the dead. So, he says, basically, the answer is the following, that to despise the birthright and its spiritual implications is the root of all those other sins he did. You understand? That means if you can sell your spiritual birthright for a bowl of beans, you're saying that that ain't worth spit. The spirituality of the birthright is not worth anything. Doesn't mean anything to you, okay? That means spirituality means nothing to you. That's the worst chet you can do. That's the worst sin you can do, to say that spirituality means nothing to you. That you're only here for the materialistic purposes of the world and pleasures, okay? So opposed to somebody else, okay, anger gets a hold of him, he kills somebody. Or lust gets a hold of him, he does something. Okay, these are terrible acts, there's no doubt about it. But at least he recognizes there's some chance he'll have remorse, regret, he'll do tshuva, because he recognizes ruchnius is what it's all about, spirituality. But vayivez as a bechura tells you, spirituality didn't mean anything to him. He doesn't care. That means he can do the worst things, never regret, never do tshuva. Okay? 2 other reasons. The bechura had to be given the way it was, b'mirma, in trickery. Yaakov had to get the Bechorah that way. 1, Yaakov goes in dressed as Esau, which is very profound. Very profound, because it's us. Sometimes we look like Esau. We eat, they eat. We drink, we sleep, they do it. You know, we have relations, they do the same things, right? We work, they work. We dress the same. We look like Esau. We wear Esau's clothes on the outside. But inside, Hakol Kol Yaakov. Inside is the voice of Yaakov. We do everything for spiritual motivations. Right? When we eat, when we sleep, when we work, we're doing it all as part of the service of Hashem, to serve Him better, whatever it is. Yes, we're staying busy today. This is what ex-disc jockeys do when they become Baal Tshuvas. Okay. We do the same acts as Esau on the outside, his clothes, but on the inside we have different intents. So one of the reasons Yaakov dressed up as Esau had to get the Bechorah, had to get the birthright, so now these materialistic blessings that are for all descendants for all time, right, even at a time when we look like Esau. If Yaakov got it as he looked like Yaakov, so you would say, okay, if you're a tzaddik like Yaakov, you get those materialistic blessings. I'm not a tzaddik like Yaakov, so, you know, we're not going to get them. No. Even if you look like Esau, those blessings will always be for the Jewish people, because Lemaisim were never as bad as Esau. Okay? So that was one reason he had to get it, looking like Esau, so even for future generations, don't have to be like a Yaakov. They can look like an Esau and still have a shaychus to those materialistic blessings. Number two, very simply, if Yitzchak knew he was talking to Yaakov, he wouldn't have given him materialistic blessings. But he wouldn't have said, He wouldn't have given brachas to me because he figures, as we'll see, materialistic blessings is a tremendous burden, a tremendous weight, a tremendous responsibility to use it properly. How many times does a person wax fat and kick? Vayishman yishurin vayivat, right? Prosperity is a narcotic that sends the soul to sleep. We figure we don't need God anymore. I got stocks and bonds, Chalila, right? So that Yitzchak, if Yaakov was dressed as Yaakov, Yitzchak would have never given him materialistic blessings because he didn't hold that was good for a tzaddik to have. He'll get lost in the materialistic world. Some reason. I'll just give you a final insight now. It says, Hakol Kol Yaakov, Hayadayim Yidei Esav. So Rashi brings down, it's from the Gemara. When the voice of Yaakov is heard, Torah and Tefillah are the strength in the world, then the hands of Yaakov won't have power. This is very schwer, though, because it doesn't say that in the verse. The verse says, Hakol Kol Yaakov, V'hayadayim, V'hayadayim Yidei Esav. It means the voice is the voice of Jacob, and at the same time, the hands are the hands of Esau. It's not, you know, here. It's like they're at the same time. So the Vilna Gaon comes up with this beautiful pshat. If you look at it, this is chapter 27. Okay? Chapter 27, verse 22. Do you know what the word kal means in Hebrew? Like kal v'chomer? Kal is light, easy. You know, light. So, you remember, the Torah's without any vowels. You look at it, Vayomer HaKol Kol Yaakov, that first kol is written without a vav. So it can be read, HaKal Kol Yaakov, Vayadayim Dei Esav, says the Vilna Gaon. It's written without that vav on purpose. You read it the following. Hakal kol Yaakov, when the voice of Yaakov is light, weak, then hayadayim yidei Esav. Then it's the hands of Esav that ground dominion in the world. When the voice of, isn't that beautiful? When the voice of Yaakov is weak, then it'll be the hands of Esav. Okay, so by the way, that says any power, any spirituality in the world, from here they learn, that's from Hakol Kol Yaakov, that's from the Jewish people. And when there's a physical prowess in the world, that's from the Yadayim of Esav. So, a lot to discuss, can't go into it all, but thank you very much for your time. Rivka knew, by the way, that the tzaddik like Yitzchak, if he gave a bracha, it would hold weight. So she went to every scheme possible that Yaakov get these brachas. Because even though she had the prophecy, that's the big question. If she had the prophecy, what does she care? Who gets the bracha? Then she understood Yitzchak, his power. He was a tzaddik. And if he gave a bracha, even to a wicked person, it would have an effect. So she had to do everything possible to get those materialistic brachas for Yaakov. Yitzchak only knew he's like, Hashem put the words in his mouth. And that's why he says afterwards, when Esau comes in for the bechor, for the blessing, he says, you know, who are you? And he finds out that basically he was deceived. And he said, I just gave your brother all the brachas. Gam baruch tia, I believe is the word. Okay? He says, gam baruch tia, he shall remain blessed. Okay? So he recognized at that point this is all from heaven. This is the way it was meant to be. Gambruch Yeh. There it is, chapter 27, verse 33. It's meant to be, those brachas are going to stay with him. He ratifies it, right. He ratifies it and he recognizes it's from God. It has to be that way. Yeah, it's a very good question, though. The whole world learns this backwards. It's not a conflict between Yitzchak and Rivka. Rivka's not going to be faulted for not giving Esav a shot at the blessings because she had a prophecy, and her job is a big rule in prophecy. You have to do everything in your power to make that prophecy come true.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're not allowed to sit back and say, oh, that's it, I got a prophecy, and do nothing. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu gets a prophecy of the burning bush. He goes in there and does all the negotiations with Paro. Right? Noach builds an ark for 120 years. All these things, okay? And so that's from Rivka's standpoint. She, whatever those things are, those are all true. Right now, all I know is I got this prophecy. I got to get those brachas, make sure they land in Yaakov's hand. Yitzhak's part, he didn't get that prophecy. My job is to make sure that Yitzchak doesn't have a taina at the end of days. I was never given a fair shot. My parents gave up on me. My father didn't love me. He didn't try, you know, he never can say that, right? He loved him, he worked with him, and he tried to improve him. He did what he was supposed to do. They're both doing their dual roles and mission within God's scheme of things, how he wanted things to work out. And the bottom line is, this is really important, God wanted Yaakov to get these brachas b'mirma. The Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted Yaakov to go down to Egypt in a dignified way, so Yosef was sold. There's a certain very limited free will. This is a very dangerous thing, but I got to tell you, in a certain essence, Yitzchak and Rivka's free will were limited. Yosef's brother's free will is limited because Hashem wanted things orchestrated in a certain way. Okay, now that they did have free will. I'm just saying it was limited to a certain degree. These things came from God's hands. And it says it more specifically, more events, more examples, Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda would have never... Yehuda was not a person. Can you imagine Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Emanuel Feldman going down the street looking for prostitutes? You know, that's not what they do. Yehuda would not go down the street looking for a prostitute. Why is that he went and saw Tamar, thought she was a prostitute, and had relations with her? So it said, from me came the matter, said Hashem. This is all for me, because kings will issue forth from this union. It had to be, the previous incident, two of Yehuda's sons already died, they didn't do their job, whatever it is. So it says, you know, whatever it is. But a lot of these great people were steered by God to do the things they were doing. These are great, great people. So Yitzchak did 100% what he was supposed to do. Rivka did what she was supposed to do. Very, very mystical stuff here. Never understood this thing about Esav, gevaltik kivud avim. You know, it's gevaltik kivud. Number one, he only gave honor to his father. He didn't honor his mother's diddly squat. Right? He didn't give any honor to his mother. Right? Number one. Number two, he caused him tremendous pain and anguish with his idol-worshipping wives. The incense caused that they used to burn for their idols caused Yitzchak to go blind. Number three, the third thing is that he planned to kill his father when he found out the blessings. I'll kill my father, right? Then I'll kill Yaakov. You know, that's kivud avim. It was all on the outside. It was all the pig's, you know, feet. So I never understood that the Gemara uses examples of Esav's gevalt kivud avim. By the way, I got to say one more thing. Any other mitzvah, Yitzchak wouldn't have loved Esav. This one mitzvah, kivud avim, says something. It means you're holding on to the tradition of your forefathers. That's what it means. There's a hope for a person like that. There's always hope for a person like that. If he has a Masorah, a chain link, he wants to be part of his ancestry, that person can do tshuva. Any other mitzvah Esav would have done wouldn't have gotten Yitzchak's love. But honoring your father or mother means something. That means you want to have a connection to your past, and that type of person can always come around. So that was a very important, that was also an important insight. That's very true. They say by the non-Jewish world, when they keep it off, then it's an insurance policy. If I, right? Because I want them to respect me. If they see me giving respect to my father and mother, then they're going to respect me. So they say it's very selfish motives. They want it as an insurance policy. Right? So to be a good person, and you know, which is important. I'm not saying it's not important, but in a certain respect, it can be a cop-out. You know, they call it cardiac Jews. Good Jew at heart. I'm a good Jew at heart, you know? Right? But Hashem wants you to be a God-fearing Jew and to listen to what he wants you to do, not what you want to do. Okay, it could be a stepping stone either way, in either direction. It's a very dangerous arena, you know, because obviously you can extrapolate from there and just start, I'm a good person, I do this, but once God tells what to do, something, you know, you can't pick and choose. But this ego is very strong in us. Anytime we try to push something, tries to push something on me, or I put it on someone else, your immediate reaction is stiff arm. You know, that's the immediate reaction. I knew there's something about Earl Campbell from the University of Texas I can learn about and use it in this class, stiff arming. The minute someone tries to tackle you of something and pushes upon you, you stiff arm it. Okay? So, so you gotta like gently see the beauty of Yiddishkeit, and they should see it on their own. And inside, every Jew really wants to do the work.
He wants to be a loyal Jew, so you don't need to force it upon them. They'll naturally come to it. But everything has to be done darchei noam, in a pleasant way.
Everything has to be done in a pleasant way for them to see that. Yes.
Yaakov is us. He's the Jew of exile, having to deal with deception, having to deal with people lying to him, trying to kill him, conning him, switching wives on him, switching his wages. That's us in exile. That's the real Jew. Our test is to remain scrupulously honest. And that's what he does with Lavan, despite that we're being dealt a bad hand and they're trying to shaft us every way. That's extreme circumstances.
The test should be honest with oneself.
Yes, that should always be. That's the bottom line. That's said very well.
You start from being honest with yourself, and then you try to be as honest as you can with the rest of the world.
Right, right.
It's a struggle.
But if there's a safer Torah in the hands of a wicked person, then you deceive, you do anything possible to get it out of his hands.
I think the stressing, the struggling must be more than just the rest of the
truth. It's a struggle. It represents our struggle in Golis. We'll talk about it more when he actually wrestles the angel. You'll see the significance of that. When he wrestles the angel and dawn breaks, and he releases him. That's representative of our long night of exile. And in the morning, at dawn, they recognize what we're all about, and we don't have to wrestle anymore. And we become Yaakov. We change from Yaakov, the heel, to Yisroel, word Rosh. Rosh is head. We go from the heel to the head. When the dawn of the redemption comes, they'll realize we're not the heel, we're at the head. And we won't have to deal in circumvent in that matter, like a heel is rounded, circumvent, rounded. We can deal straight. Yisrael is the word yashar, to go straight. Well, we'll deal straight then. Until then, in exile, we always have to like by hook and crook.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.